Some of you know, others of you may not, that I am a worm farmer. Now, if you've not been introduced to worm farming, you need to know that there are other worm farmers in our midst. Sitting next to you might be a worm farmer. Such a scandal. Worm farming is an approach to something that we throw away every day. You have really three options with the salads and vegetables and breads that you use in the kitchen. Whatever you throw away, whatever you cut away, whatever coffee you make, you can throw away in the trash. And each trash day, the trash people will come along and they will pick it up and they will take it to the landfill and they will throw it in, pile a bunch of dirt on top of it, and make, along with many other collections, a big hill where there was not a hill before. Well, the other option is a nifty electrical machine that is connected to your sink. You can dump everything down that sink, grind it up, and send it through the sewer treatment of Fairfax County. Not quite sure what happens to all of it then, because it's so mashed up and mushed up, and I don't quite understand what happens to everything. But I suppose it gets weeded out in some way and works its way through the system, hopefully getting back into the system clean and ready to go, both in water and in land. But a worm farmer takes a closer look at things and decides to take care of the problem at home. A worm farmer takes the biological material of our kitchens and puts it in a box with a bunch of worms, with a little bit of water or dampness and the right bedding material. And if you have 1 or 2 pounds of worms, they will eat all of the biological mess of your kitchen up, turning it into some of the most amazing compost and fertilizer you will ever see. It is incredible what that stuff will do. A little bit of worm compost and a little bit of worm tea can make a garden grow. Well, you say, Tony, why does it matter that you're a worm farmer? Well, there's a principle here that needs to be looked at. If you hear today's reading, Paul talks about his past, the great things that he has done, the wonderful accomplishments that he has had in his life, and the blessings of being born of the right people at the right time into the right family. Paul, for all intents and purposes, is the perfect person for God. He excelled in everything that God valued. And even so, Paul has come to a place where he counts all of that as nothing but refuse. I don't like the word refuse. In Bible study, when we were talking about this, the gathered participants liked refuse better than what the King James used. The King James Version says Paul calls his past and his accomplishments nothing but dung. And that is what it is. And it's important to make a distinction here, because in our spiritual life, we can look at our past in a variety of ways. Most of us look at our past as something to build the future on, something to count on to help us say we are a decent person, that we have accomplished something, that our past shows that we're good people. That's what Paul was addressing. Now, for others of us, we look at our past and we want to forget every single part of it we can. We have parts of our past that the second we remember, we relive the pain and anguish of that moment, the embarrassment of that time, and want nothing to do with it. And we consider it something to put behind us, something to be done with, of no good use whatsoever. But when you think of our past as dung, we have to put ourselves into an agricultural model. There is no such thing as worthless dung. Think about it. What it does. What that very stuff is able to accomplish in agriculture. Given time, given the right conditions, dung becomes less harmful. What is poison at its freshest, what is obnoxious at its freshest, becomes less so with time. If you go up to Woodlawn Stables, you will see as they clean out the stables that the initial stuff that came out that morning is pretty nasty. But they work their stable sweepings so that eventually they move about 20 or 30 feet around the garage, and they're composted the whole time until eventually, given time and the right conditions, you have this beautiful compost, this mixture of wonderful stuff that really has nothing but the nicest smell to it, an earthy richness that seems to be guaranteed to grow almost anything. Likewise, when you think about this composting and this time, you begin to realize that there is some space that takes place, some stretching. As things are broken down, what was useless as its freshest becomes broken down into chemicals that every plant needs. And because every plant needs them, it is nutritious. Our past, spiritually, gives us the same richness in which to build our present and future life. We cannot hide from our past. We cannot not have lived it. It's already lived. But when we give our past, both its successes and its failures, some distance and some space, we begin to accumulate a series of experiences and ideas and beliefs that, given time, develop a source of richness for our spiritual life. Experiences that remind us of God's presence. God's presence to uplift, God's presence to forgive, God's presence to lead to success. Given time and space, we begin to break down our parts of our memories, our past, and realize that what happened wasn't perhaps all our fault, or what happened wasn't all our doing, or what happened could be seen in a different light. And as we do that kind of work, we begin to feed our souls through the touch of God, through the power of the Spirit, through the love of God. Our past becomes a rich foundation, a rich nourishment of our future spiritual life. That is what Paul is doing with his past. He merely counts it as dung. It is of no value as it is in achieving what he most desires, that is knowledge of the resurrection and the presence of Christ. Our past doesn't get us to where we want to be. But Paul doesn't forget his past and bury it. Rather, he lets time and distance break it down, and it becomes a way of him to proclaim how rich and wonderful and good God is. His past becomes a way of explaining the uniqueness and specialness of Christ. Look at this, what God has done. Compared to these wonderful things I have done, it is so much greater that these are as if they're no good. Paul makes it clear through his reflections about the past that Jesus Christ is the supreme good, that to which anyone would want to come. It is, in a sense, a cleaning up that we accomplish in Lent. In cooperation with God, we offer ourselves to God to take our lives and to clean them up, to stop making the past poisoning or poison for our present and our future, to detoxify, if you will, what has gone before, so that upon what's gone before, God can build a new life fed by the experiences that have garnered us wisdom and experience of God's presence, his forgiving love, and his empowering presence to live into the future that God has offered to us. And so I invite you, my friends, to count your past as just so much dung, and putting it in proper perspective, look towards the resurrection of Jesus, that you may be what apprehended by him, and that you may apprehend Christ, that you may know to the very depths of who you are the power and the presence and the love of God. Put it behind you that you may move forward. As a way of doing that, I invite you to turn in your hymnal to number 892, and let us for a moment think about what it is to ourselves that we would like to put behind us to get some distance, and what it is that God would like us to think about and give thanks for in our past, and what it is in our past that becomes something useful for feeding the future. And then, in a minute, we'll pray together this prayer of confession.